Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
Anybody want to go potty?
Miss Espionage?
Miss Espionage?
J-Rev, you get to go in the front today. 2 minutes, everybody.
Motorhead.
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about what else the Iditarod, which is a race about dog mushing, which is something you can do while whistling, apparently. I'm your host, Casey Grove, and before we harness these dogs, put some booties on them, and get whistling on down the trail, how about a word from our sponsor?
Support for Iditapod 2020 comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
The Iditapod is a production of Alaska Public Media. It's Sunday, and that was Matt Failer leaving Galena whistling a little bit there to start his day and starting off today's Iditapod. Failer probably feeling a lot better after a tough time earlier with one of his dogs, Cool Cat, who, according to Anchorage TV station KTVA, suffered a twisted gut. Looks like she was in some pretty serious trouble. Ended up being flown out of the race to have emergency surgery. We're told she's doing much better. Sure, Matt Failer is doing much better with that news. Anyway, the Iditarod has hit the coast. At least the front runners have. There are actually teams spread out from Thomas Warner in first place up at mile 714 in Unalakleet as I'm recording this, all the way back 230 miles to the current Red Lantern, Quince Mountain at mile 482 on the way from the Cripple Checkpoint to Ruby and about to reach the Yukon River here in a little bit. But way out front, Warner arrived in Unalakleet a little after 10 a.m. this morning and continued to rest his team there for more than 5 hours as of this recording. The next checkpoint is Shaktulik, which has changed a little this year with concerns about coronavirus possibly spreading from an influx of visitors related to the race. So supplies for mushers and some kind of shelter will be available outside the village, but it's not going to be the same checkpoint that it's been in the past. And a quick note on that, we have not heard about any developments as far as further changes to the Iditarod due to coronavirus concerns. We had a little on the podcast about that yesterday. If you want to go back and hear about how the mushers and the race officials and the logistics personnel are adjusting, that is in the last episode of the Iditapod. As far as that issue today, though, nothing new to report. Out front, though, like I said, in getting ready to head north up the coast is Thomas Warner in Unalakleet. Back up the trail, he had arrived at the previous checkpoint of Caltag a couple hours behind the previous leader, Jesse Royer. But Warner was able to leave a little over an hour before Royer. Something else, though, is that Warner did not appear to have a single long break on this 85-mile run from Caltag to Unalakleet. Looking at the Iditarod tracker, it looked like Warner's team had several shorter breaks at somewhat regular intervals along the way, maybe just long enough to give the dogs a snack. Well, some other mushers like Royer, Wade Mars, and Aaron Burmeister broke up that distance somewhere in the middle, more like a break of several hours rather than a few minutes. And just looking at the run rest times for like the top 10 teams or so, it really looks like there's actually room for four or five teams to make a move at this point, maybe jump up a position or two, even take the lead. Warner may be taking a longer break in Unalakleet though, and for getting there first, there's more gold nuggets. Warner wins the Ryanair Gold Coast Award and $2,000 in gold nuggets. But something gold nuggets can't buy you is good weather. And a large swath of the western coast of Alaska, from Unalakleet all the way to Nome, is currently under a winter storm warning until 6 a.m. Monday. The National Weather Service forecast says it'll actually be pretty warm, up to 32 degrees, dropping below zero at night into the mid-20s, and maybe not really a huge amount of snow, but that's possibly going to change to light freezing rain Tuesday, then back to snow, who knows, maybe back to rain again. That could make things a little more interesting if the sled dog teams start getting soaked out there on the coast. We've seen mushers pack rain jackets in the past, some maybe warmer races in the past. But this race, it started off a little cool. They got a little colder out there. We saw some double digits below zero in this year's race. And then now it's warming up, so I kind of wonder if any of the mushers have raincoats or what this year. There will be some mention of turning a trash bag into a raincoat coming up. That's something we've heard about in the past. That's in a little piece of advice from one musher to another, and that is going to require us going a little bit back up the trail to Galena. That is where yesterday, toward the middle of the Iditarod race pack, the competition was a lot less fierce. There's a good deal more collaboration among the racers, for example. Mushers swap advice, gauge conditions, and compare potential strategies. That's certainly true at this particular stage of the race, given changes with checkpoints and unfavorable weather conditions along the Yukon and maybe some of those checkpoints to come. In Galena, Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes, our reporter on the trail, observed those collegial bonds among two mushers at very different stages in their race and different stages in their lives. Here's Zach with that story.
As she feeds her team, Jessica Klaika is wet. It's snowing, but just warm enough that moisture melts on contact, soaking her bulky white outerwear and dampening her dogs. She's testing a new feeding routine to get them eating enough.
But yeah, they start, it seems like when it's wet out, they start to crave kibble. So I was gonna try this first. You get to do so many experimenting, trying to get all their calories in them.
Klaika's feeling disappointed. She took her 8-hour rest upriver in Ruby. By the time she set back out, the fresh, wet snow made for a slower-than-expected run. After finishing her dog chores, she sat down in the nearby community hall and wolfed down bowls of hot moose soup.
Sitting here kind of debating how long to wait before I take off again because it's going to be a slow trek to Nolato.
Sitting across from Klaika is Linwood Fiedler, whom she affectionately calls Boss.
I worked for him for 6 years in the summer.
Fiedler runs dog tours on a glacier outside of Juneau, and season after season, Klaika was one of his employees. Now he's doling out advice on how she should handle what is turning out to be an increasingly difficult Iditarod.
I would find the biggest garbage bag you can find and make a poncho out of that, by the way.
66-year-old Fiedler has run 25 Iditarods, finishing as high as second. He talks race tactics with the 30-year-old Klaika, particularly for the long run up the Norton Sound coast from Unalakleet to Koyuk, a run made all the longer by news that there won't be a checkpoint at Shaktulik.
What can be an extremely, extremely hostile environment. You just cannot underestimate how difficult that coast can be, the potential of it to be real bad. So I was giving some sage wisdom to Jess about potential places she might think about stopping where she'd be a little protected from elements for a while and give the dogs a rest before taking out on the sea ice. Because once you do, you're pretty well committed. You know, there's no turning back and there's going forwards it can be pretty slow.
Fiedler says it's normal for mushers to share earned knowledge about the trail. And though she finished last year's race, Klaika is still quite new to the Iditarod, figuring out how to adapt her plans and her training to unpredictable conditions on the way to Nome.
I'm taking it one checkpoint at a time. I can't get it too much into goals right now.
For Fiedler, the race is over. His team got sick on the second day. Their appetites didn't recover, and each run diminished their reserves.
At this point, they've lost too much body weight. I'm uncomfortable with running a team in that condition, and this has turned into not an easy trail. So it's just time for us to go home, kind of lick our wounds and regroup for another year.
After he got to Galena, he scratched. Even as he's counseling Klaika, Fiedler's navigating his own distinct set of emotional circumstances. He doesn't regret ending his run, but that doesn't mean it's easy.
It was a decision I had to make. I mean, to me, it was very clear that to go forward was not in the best interest of the dogs. So, but it's hard. You work all winter, you know, for an event, and you have to pull the plug earlier than you wanted to, so it's just dealing with that. But it's one of those things that you know it's the right thing to do, you know, because it's not just you, it's a family and friends that have rallied. But on the scale of things, this is a pretty small bump in the road. You know, there's bigger things to have a tear over, but at the moment, you know, it doesn't feel very good.
At the end of the day, Fiedler says, most Iditarod mushers are bound by a common purpose, a shared love of dogs, the land, and the race. So, of course, he'll tell Jessica Klaika about his special spot where she can duck out of the wind on the way to Koyuk. In Galena, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Nice story there from Zach. Second year Iditarod racer Jessica Klaika talking to the boss, Linwood Fiedler, having to bow out in his 26th running of the Iditarod. That was from Galena, and sticking with Galena for a minute, along with that sort of different vibe in the middle to the back of the pack, one thing that often gets overlooked are the volunteers working in the checkpoints. For a little bit more about the folks holding down the dog yards in particular, that one in Galena, here is an audio postcard from KNOM's Ben Matheson.
Every dog team deserves the same level, the same quality of a parking space. I'm Jackie Stark. I guess I'm a friend of the Iditarod, and I'm here on the trail crew. Trail crew does any kind of the physical labor that needs to be done. We're guiding the dogs when they come into the checkpoint, so I think that's my favorite part, because we have to run, and the dogs follow you when you're running, and then we park them in the lot here, and then otherwise just maintaining the lot. We have a shovel and a rake and pure womanly power here that I'm just using these bags. And I mean, honestly, the rake is good, but just old-fashioned hands and arms pushing it in and kicking it with your boot. It's the best way. It's kind of like getting toothpaste back in the toothpaste container after you've squeezed it out. I mean, I'm kind of getting postman syndrome because the dogs come and it's work, and then they leave and it's more work. Because the straw beds are, they keep the dogs insulated, so they're laying on them, they're sleeping on them. If they're coming just in real quick for half an hour or so, there's usually not much of a mess and we just take up all that hay. But these dogs have been staying here for 6 or 8 hours. I've been seeing a lot of salmon and various white fish bits, and then the actual kibble that they use, because sometimes they use dry kibble, and then some of the dogs are making nice solid little gifts for us, and some of them really have the runs, so that's been fascinating.
Well, thank you for showing me the ropes here.
Yeah, thanks for learning.
So yeah, a lot of it comes down to scooping dog poop. But that's the reality of it. A lot of dogs means a lot of poop and straw to clean up, and they're out there doing that with a smile. What gave me a smile today was getting this listener question coming up, because not only is it from a longtime listener, I knew that I was going to be able to do the easiest possible thing here, which also involves a shameless plug for work that I didn't even have to do, and that's to use a video Alaska Public Media produced before my time that answers part of the question. We'll get to that in a minute, but first, here is the question.
Hi, I'm Heather from Caribou, Maine. I have been following your podcast since it started, and I enjoy listening to it every day. My question involves what the mushers wear to keep themselves warm. I notice some of them have big fluffy coats and snow pants, and others seem to have light jackets, but they all are wearing something. What do they do that keeps them warm in the 50 below weather? Do they have special gloves? I know that Mackie has had trouble with his hands throughout the years. How does he keep them warm? Thanks so much for answering my questions.
Thanks for that question, Heather, and thanks for listening. Just to answer part of that clothing question, I think why you sometimes see mushers wearing thick parkas in some photos with those fur ruffs, and other times they're wearing thinner stuff, is just that the weather and temperature is changing over the course of the race. The main thing there, I think, is adaptability. So, you know, layering. And that allows you to, if it's not as cold, not sweat so much. You don't want to get moist, and really that'll get you colder if things cool off and your clothes are kind of wet. And of course, if things change and get colder all the way down to 50 below, maybe, you got to be able to wear those thicker down jackets, and sometimes just a full-on thick down snowsuit is what they're wearing, like somebody on an expedition in the Arctic or Antarctic. For more on that, we have a couple words from Aaron Burmeister and Cody Straith. Burmeister, of course, up toward the front of the race right now. Straith watching his wife, Paige Drobny, competing in this year's Iditarod. This brief explanation from Aaron Burmeister and Cody Straith is from our Mushing Explained series. It's posted on YouTube on the Alaska Public Media channel. This is that shameless plug I told you about. Maybe just search for Mushing Explained and Alaska Public Media to find those. Anyway, with Zach Hughes narrating, a little bit of music underneath, here is Aaron Burmeister and Cody Straith in that order.
Temperatures on the trail can be brutally cold. So how do mushers stay warm for days at a time?
We're not wearing the wool and canvas that people did in the early days. It's a lot more Gore-Tex and high-tech gears with high-tech insulation. And what I wear today is all custom-made gear, custom tailored to where I want the pockets, how I want the insulation. It's very warm. It's very lightweight, breathes well. It dries out quickly and doesn't hold much moisture. You don't wear cotton. Cotton holds moisture, it's gonna get you cold and you're gonna freeze to death in it.
I mean, I have probably 80% of what I need on me. My beaver mitts, which may or may not be on me. I do have a spare bag of clothing because things happen on the trail.
That video actually goes on to explain what the dogs are wearing out there. And like I said, for more of those Mushing Explained videos, check out Alaska Public Media on YouTube. There's one about sled design. And don't worry, Claudia in Arlington, Virginia, we're still working on getting a good answer to your question about the sleds. If you want to see and hear a little bit more about the sled designs, Cody Strath is in another video there. Also, Heather, you asked about Lance Mackey and his hands. I'm going to be posting an interview with Lance Mackey that Zach did, and that explains a little bit about the hands. He talks about that and talks about where he finds himself in this race. Of course, the four-time Iditarod champion hasn't really been running up towards the front of the Iditarod in recent years. Even said he was maybe thinking about retiring. Here is back again and has been either in the top 10 or the top 20 of this year's race, doing really well, actually. So that interview will be posted as a bonus episode. We also have a lot more Iditarod content at alaskapublic.org/Iditarod, including dog photos and dog profiles. And we just added some more, so it's time for today's dog profile. It's a dog by the name of Dodge, a 70-pound male who runs up toward the front, it sounds like, in your Life Seth Olsom's team, in lead or in the swing position. When Ben talked to Yor about Dodge and Takotna a couple days ago, he was harnessed up in the swing position, so behind the lead dog or lead dogs, in a position that has those swing dogs helping swing the team out around turns rather than cutting off the turn, maybe causing the whole team to pull the sled to the inside of the turn, making it a little harder to balance or navigate a turn. Anyway, Dodge is kind of white with orange fur all over, pretty floppy ears, and some real purty blue eyes. There's a picture of Dodge wearing a bright orange dog jacket in Takotna there at alaskapublic.org/Iditarod. And here is your Life Seth Olsom describing Dodge.
He's sitting up there looking around and he's had his food and he just wants more and he's just very happy, obnoxious dogs. He's just always looking for stuff and always on the go. And he's kind of a knucklehead. He's just... If we're running, that's all he's thinking about, and if it's he can hear a kibble in the food bucket, that's all he can think about. So he's kind of one-tracked, but he's a really cool dog. I wish I had more of that dog. And he's super smart too. I mean, he's a great leader. He takes commands, and he's good.
And was that him kind of up in swing there, looking? He's spinning around.
Spinning around there, yeah.
Spinning around and around. Well, the clock keeps on spinning and ticking and moving along just like the Iditarod. We'll be heading into day 8 tomorrow. As for me, I'll be back on the morning radio grind bright and early. No more shows from home, however, under a table and whatnot. We'll be back here in the studio and our reporters out on the trail in Unalakleet as I speak and hopefully heading north after that. Unless, of course, that storm changes some flight plans. That sort of thing, always unpredictable. One thing I can say for sure is that is all the time we have for today. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras. I'm your host, Casey Grove, and until next time, happy trails.
I'm going to visit the little boy's room real quick.
Okay.
You guys don't mind.
I'll turn around.
Oh, you look so pretty in polka dots. I am overdressed for this occasion. Ooh,
good girl.
Wow. I feel like I'm practicing for a wrestling competition with one of those trash bags. I'm sweating so much. If we can do it in under 7.5 hours, I think that would be a small victory here. It's going to be so slow. What do you think, Banshee? You up to that?
Hey, Banshee. Hey, Floyd.
Yeah, my pleasure. Ready? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You're cleared to go.
All right.
Later, guys. A good one.